Senator Tester, thank you for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
It is great to be here. Thanks.
Today, the Obama administration announced some big news around coal leasing, and they said they're putting a moratorium on any major new coal leases on federal lands until they can complete a comprehensive review of whether the fees that mining companies pay to lease that coal are a fair return to taxpayers and reflect coal's impact on the environment. What do you think that means for Montana?
By your statement right there, you know more about what was in that statement than I do. I just found out about this very, very early this morning and didn't even have the information you gave me. So, which, by the way, doesn't make me happy with the Obama administration when they don't, at least come in and talk to us, let us know what's going on. We find out about it through NPR, which is where all the good news comes from. But I would just say this. There's been some debate over lease values and if they're in the range where the private sector should have them. I think that it's really, really important that we make sure the taxpayers get fair value for the coal or whatever it might be on our federal lands.
You think that's happening now?
I don't know. The administration had some hearings on it, and there are some folks out there that I know there's been bills put up to give coal companies a huge break on it. I don't think that's fair, but by the same token, you shouldn't be gouging them either. My guess is that on most of our federal lands, we don't get fair market value for what we get out of it. That being said, I don't mean to make that a blanket statement. There's parts of it I'm sure that we do. But I don't think it's bad to take a look and make that assessment as to whether we're getting the right value. I don't know what the impacts are going to be of the moratorium. I've got to get more information on that and figure out what that's going to be. I will tell you at first look at this, if the moratorium goes on for an extended period of time, it's going to have some negative impacts. And I don't want to see that happen to our economy. Look, he came out with a coal power plant rule, which could have some pretty negative impacts on our economy. And I get why he did it, because of climate change and because of health benefits. And quite frankly, I think we need to figure out a way to try to make that work for Montana. But if we're going to take the coal industry off the map entirely, I've got a problem with that. If we're making a transition, it ought to be thoughtful, it ought to be orderly, and we ought to be doing it in a way that gets us to an endpoint where it limits the amount of climate change that's occurring because of fossil-based fuels. But I just don't think you come in and just cut it off. If that's the attempt here, we're probably going to be pretty vocally against it. If, on the other hand, there really is a plan and it's done in short order to figure out if we're getting fair market value for our leases, that's good government. We will analyze as it comes down, but I really, Eric, don't have enough information on it to really come out and say no or yes. And I'm sure as that information comes out, there will be folks that blast him plenty, and there will be folks that wrap their arms around him too. So the truth is probably going to be somewhere in the middle.
In your response to the president's State of the Union address, you said it's time for lawmakers to get to work fixing the dysfunction that's plaguing Congress.
That's right.
And President Obama made pleas for those in government to abandon partisanship and work together. What's something that Democrats in Congress can do to reach across the aisle and cooperate with Republicans to get something done?
Everything. Truthfully, I mean, whether it's defeating ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call them, whether it's getting arms around our national debt, whether it's doing things more parochial to me, like getting the VA to work better, whether it's making higher education more affordable through potentially increased Pell Grants or other proposals that are out there. I don't think there's anything that we're going to deal with in this Congress that's not going to get done on a bipartisan basis. Unfortunately, because the amount of money that goes into these campaigns, bipartisanship is becoming a rare word in Washington, D.C.
And given that it's an election year and we have a lame duck president, is it naive to think that anything's going to get done in Congress in 2016?
I don't think anybody has very high expectations for 2016. That being said, I think there are pending issues out there that we as folks in Congress need to lay down. Look, the president laid down his agenda in the State of the Union. I think we ought to determine ours and we ought to move forward. Unfortunately, there is so much politics in Washington, D.C. that, look, the repeal of Obamacare that the House did the first week is just an extension of flaming up the base to be able to get more money into politics to try to get folks elected. And until we do something with the dark money that's in politics and with the amount of money that's going into politics, and it's very difficult on both of those, I think you're going to continue to see incredible dysfunction within Congress.
You brought up Obamacare and the recent vote by both houses to send the bill to the president to repeal Obamacare, which he, of course, vetoed. Do you think that's an issue that's going to make it tougher for Governor Bullock to get elected and for Denise Juneau to make a strong run at the Montana's House seat?
I think it just depends on how the message is framed. Look, I don't care what program you're looking at that comes out of the federal government. Very seldom are they perfect. And so we need to take and look for opportunities to make Obamacare better. There are things we've done already. There's a lot of other things we need to do. Here's the problem. Folks talk about repealing it and replacing it with the old system. Whether they say that or not, it is a fact. There's no plan out there to replace them anything else but the old system. So repeal it, replace it with an old system that doesn't work is not an option. What we should be talking about doing is how we can work together to make Obamacare work better, to give people access to health care so that when they get sick, you're going to be in the poor farm for the rest of your life. The bottom line is that as long as we're on this, we're going to repeal it, 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 on and on and on, 50-some times. Without talking about let's figure out ways to fix it, we're going to be spinning our wheels. And I applaud what the legislature did last session with the Medicaid expansion. I applaud the leadership that the governor provided in that. But that's only part of the puzzle. There's other things we need to do at the federal level to get this program so it works better. And it's not helpful when the only thing we talk about is repealing it and replacing it with the old system.
When it comes to access to healthcare, you pushed hard for this new Veterans Choice program that's supposed to enable veterans who can't see a doctor, can't get an appointment with a VA doctor within 30 days or live far from a VA facility to be able to go to a provider closer to get healthcare. Is that working out as you'd hoped?
And now, once again, it needs some tweaks. There's too much red tape. There's untimely payment to the private providers. There's unnecessary rules put up about who can play and who can't play in the private sector. We're trying to deal with all those things on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. I think the choice program was a step in the right direction. When the VA is clogged up and a veteran can't get in, that they can go to the private sector is the right thing to do.
Is it making a difference yet for vets? Are there vets out there that are benefiting from that?
For some vets, I think there's some benefits. For other vets, there's a lot of frustration, too much red tape, too much time being spent on hold. I talked to Secretary McDonald this week, as a matter of fact, day before yesterday, about this very issue of timely payments to providers and how do we get the folks who need health care outside the VA to get it more promptly. I know the VA is working on it, and I can tell you the Senate Veterans Affairs is working on reducing the red tape so that folks can get the health care that they've earned.
VA Secretary Bob McDonald has now been on the job for about 17 months. Are you seeing real positive changes from his leadership?
Yeah, I think he's doing a good job. Now, I said that about his predecessor and that predecessor and that predecessor. I mean, I've had good relationships with all the secretaries that have been in the VA. Obviously, each one of them has their strengths. I think Bob brings a private sector perspective that is a real strength to the VA, and I think that he's working very, very hard.
Can you point to anything specifically that Secretary McDonald has done that's made a real difference for veterans in terms of getting access to health care?
He has really made a concerted effort to try to get more health care folks into the VA. That's one thing. Now, is it perfect yet? No, but it's a heck of a lot better now than it was under his predecessor.
The newspaper Stars and Stripes says that nationally the number of veterans waiting more than 30 days for care has actually grown. You think that's a true statement?
That's a problem, and if they said it, it's probably true. We need to get our arms around this and make sure that's not the case. Look, to give the VA perspective for a second, we've got Vietnam vets who have never been in the healthcare system that are coming on, and that's a very, very good thing. These folks are getting older now. They're in late 60s, 70s, and quite frankly, they need healthcare. So you've got that bubble that's coming through, plus you've got the bubble from the wars that we've been fighting for the last 15 years, where you've got issues like traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, mental health issues that are very costly and take a lot of time to get under control. But the proof is there that if these folks can get early treatment for these issues, they can have a much better life and cost the VA less down the road. So they have their problems, but that's just an excuse. We need to make sure, and it should have been started in a way facility-wise and doctor-wise, that we knew when the Vietnam vets got older, just like the World War II vets, that they were going to need more services.
The folks out in Oregon that are occupying that National Wildlife Refuge, what word do you use to describe them, and what should be done with those folks?
Well, I think they're folks that are out for press attention, and that's exactly what they're getting. Look, if I rent land and don't pay my lease on that land, I am not considered a hero. The property owner takes that land away from me and gives it to somebody who'll pay their bills. The ranchers, even though they maybe have leased this land for 50 or 100 years, maybe it's multi-generational, which in a lot of cases it is, they still have an obligation to pay. It's not their land.
What do you think needs to be done?
Well, I think it's got to be careful. I mean, I'm always, whether it's this conflict or a conflict in the Middle East, I think the first thing that you need to do is negotiate and try to get them out. But ultimately, if they're not willing to leave, you have to forcibly take them out.
Senator Tester, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.